Are you ready, girls?
You hear that? What was that? What was that? Oh my god. It's episode 15 of Midnight Munster from CinemaFromage.com. How are you folks? This is Casey Criswell, your host, bringing you some DVD coverage, even a theatrical coverage this time. So this week we're going to be covering the very wonderful zombie flick Dead and Breakfast. With line dancing zombies, I should say. And also, we have the return of our special Cinema Fromage junior correspondent coming with us this week, meeting up with Colleen, and they are discussing the new kids release, Igor, starring John Cusack, John Cleese, and many, many others. So that's our show for this week, folks. Dead and Breakfast and Igor. On Dead and Breakfast this week, we have two new guests, special guests with us this week. We have William Hainline and Greg, whose name I forget because Colleen's never told me the guy's last name. These are old friends of Colleen's. They were here with us for the weekend, watched the movie with us, and joined us on the Dead and Breakfast coverage. So be sure to check that out, folks. Let us know what you think. Any suggestions, questions, comments, or whatever, always by email, cinemafromage@gmail.com. I'm pretty sure our voicemail's dead now because nobody's called it. Bastards. But that's okay. we're still happy to hear from you via email, folks. So get in touch. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. I'm kind of lonely, man. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/cinemafromage, or you can hit us up on MySpace at www.myspace.com/cinemafromage. And as always, you can tune in every Monday morning to hear my dulcet tones on the Bloody Good Horror Podcast for bloodygoodhorror.com, as I am in there every week with Eric and Mark and Schnars, having a good old time. And this next show coming up is going to be on David Cronenberg's The Brood, so be sure not to miss it. You can also check out the latest episode that we just released. It was on my staff pick, the ever classic, the totally awesome, my all-time favorite, Disney horror flick. Yes, that's right, folks. Disney horror flicks, Something Wicked This Way Comes. That's on Bloody Good Horror Podcast, number 42, I believe. Just check it out. Also, be sure to check out www.cinemafromage.com for my reviews, news, and anything else random that squeezes out of my head. And for that matter, check out bloodygoodhorror.com. I have weekly episode recaps of Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, showing up there every week, as well as reviews, blog posts, and all sorts of fun stuff. And the rest of the people out there on bloodygoodhorror.com, they're pretty kick-ass too. So, check it out. So hang on to your butts, folks, because here we go. Dead and Breakfast and Igor.
Do you believe in good and evil? Where are we?
Lovelock.
What?
Is it anywhere near Harris?
I think we spend the night here.
Hello. Now, I'd be a little careful staying up there if I was you.
Nice choice, Sarah. Have you ever seen Psycho? Where are you? I'm getting married in 10 minutes. We're stuck in this town.
They're here. There's something happening around here. Ain't nobody can explain.
What the hell did he say?
This guy's possessed for Christ's sake. So you don't listen to him?
What do you think the whole ceremony is? Ain't sure, but I'm ready for whatever it might be.
You're talking about zombies.
I got a feeling pretty soon they ain't safe around here.
The poster! This is like a bad horror movie.
Well, three young couples were riding along. No! They had the direction they messed up wrong. So they stopped in love lock to take a snooze. I was working at the gas station attending. A couple pretty girls and some men did ask me if I knew where they could spend the night.
The head, you gotta hit him in the head.
It's the only place in town, you see. But they were greeted warmly by death, horror, and fright. Yeah, well this used to be such a quiet little town. We never had too much trouble around here. Well that spirit was released. And we were haunted by the deceased. And that is all this thing that's going down here. Yeah, well this used to be such a quiet little town.
Dancing.
2004 brought us the Matthew Lettweiler comedy horror musical with line dancing zombies, of course, in Dead and Breakfast, starring Jeremy Sisto, Ever Carradine. Portia de Rossi had a cameo, Diedrich Bader, David Carradine, all sorts of good people mixed in there. So joining us this week to talk to this, we have Andy.
Hello, my name is William Hainlein, the author of the unpublished novel, The Reality Engineers, which after this will probably remain unpublished.
And Greg.
Hi there, I'm Greg, and my friend just managed to plug a non-existing product.
That's right!
And of course, as always, we have Colleen.
Yep, I'm here.
And here we are. Here we go. We're going to talk about some Dead and Breakfast. So, for those of you unfamiliar, it's a group of people heading cross-country to a wedding of a friend of theirs. These people are all loosely associated. They know each other vaguely, friends of friends. Traveling in Winnebago, they get partway through a small Texas town and decide to stop for the night.
Because they're lost.
And they stop, get gas, stay at the bed and breakfast, ran by David Carradine, and the very French Diedrich Bader as the chef, to which they find out that there's all sorts of Eastern juju going on that eventually gets unleashed by one unwitting member of the group, releasing the evil spirit of David Carradine's dead son upon the town, and so the town starts to become possessed.
Right. It's a different take on the zombies genre. I'm sorry, you just stuck the mic in my face.
Well, because you're supposed to talk into it.
I know. Well, it's different because there's four of us in here and we're sharing two mics, so it's a little...
Are you supposed to be the professionals?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm not used to that sort of thing.
There went just do what they do.
It's a new blood making you nervous, I understand.
But it's a different take on the whole zombie genre because it's not where, you know, you get bit and you get turned into one. There's no actual disease. There's a little tiny box, and if a body part, a little bit of blood, a little bit of flesh, a little bit of hair gets put into this box, you then become possessed. So it's a lot different than what we normally would see in most mainstream zombie films.
Yeah,
and everybody just sits there staring at me.
Crickets at Q. One of the things that I loved about this film was I loved, you know, what it was, you know, which was a very morbidly whimsical. I don't think those words have ever been put together before, but a very morbidly whimsical, a take on the zombie genre, and also sort of brought back for me, you know, a little bit, not quite the same, of course, and I can get into this later because I've actually thought about talking about this and decided that I wanted to earlier on. What brought back for me was, you know, Evil Dead, you know, especially Evil Dead 2, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and the campiness of it, and and the whole Balladeer also tying into it for some strange reason makes me automatically think of Dukes of Hazzard, of course.
Well, for those
that field association.
For those that don't know, this movie features a country singing balladeer who at one point becomes a rap/country singing balladeer.
Right, and this is the balladeer is actually played by Zach Selwyn, who you may know from G4's Attack of the Show. He's one of the co-hosts on there. And he actually has a band out there called Zachariah and the... I can't think of the name now, of course. We'll come up with it. If you look, if you listen back to the shows at the very first episode of Midnight Munster, the intro music of that show was actually Zach Selwyn's song from Dead and Breakfast, the We're Coming to Kill You. So like Andy was saying, it does add a different, it's a definite distinct flavor or voice that's given to the movie that makes all the difference in the world.
Right. Well, it's like what Greg was talking about earlier, when we were sitting out in the living room watching it, that the music is... You were talking about how your dad mentioned something about...
Right, I'll give you a little backstory on that. We were watching the old 80s show Werewolf. I don't know if you remember that. But it was a classic. It happened every show. The guy would get knocked behind something and would undergo his transformation and would rise back into view the werewolf. And my dad turned to me and said, "That is why music is so important." I was like, you know, explain. He's like, "Well, that would be funny if it weren't for the dramatic music. A guy gets knocked over a couch and comes up a werewolf, that'd be funny." So when you have an advancing horde of the undead coming towards you, if they had the dramatic Lord of the Rings choral music, it would be kind of creepy and unsettling and dramatic. You have country music, all of a sudden it just has a bizarre, absurd flavor to it.
Which I think ties up with the movie itself, which is very absurd.
The movie was ridiculous, and I love that. There's not enough ridiculous in movies nowadays.
You see, especially horror films, I mean, if this had the zany camera angles and the wild, but like sort of like a so do Barry Sonnenfeld cinematography, you know, this would have been mistaken for a Sam Raimi film from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is exactly what it would have been like. And I really think that one number, I made a remark during the movie, I said, this is a take on Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Oh, yeah.
Because what you had, had a bunch of zombies line dancing to this semi-rap music.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had the musicians on top of the Winnebago as zombies also, and they're singing, you know, "We're coming to kill you," you know. And
I'm going to jump in here real quick just to say, Brother D from Mail Order Zombie, I still stand by my words that line dancing zombies are the best zombies.
Well, that's because they're gonna be the slowest ones to reach you because they're
well. There's like, also a pattern
but just because you're undead doesn't mean you can't have a little style.
Exactly.
You know, these are zombies that can have fun. It's not all about brains. Another interesting aspect was in this one, the zombies. In the average zombie movie, zombies are presented as a marauding horde, being either viral or undead in nature. It's always just an advancing wall of mindless carnivorous flesh. Where in this case, the zombies had a ringleader that maintained a general human disposition.
Right.
Albeit extremely evil, he still had intelligence and a sense of humor and remembered his past life.
Yeah, and see, that's really interesting because in most zombie films, zombies are presented as these shambling wretches with pale, filmy eyes, with no individuality, no uniqueness to them at all. In these, I mean, not only did the ringleader retain his individuality, but every single individual zombie retained their individuality, their individual quirks.
Right, well, like I said, this is a totally different take. This isn't the I'm getting bit by a zombie and therefore it's passing it on to me, or there's some sort of thing in the air that is creating this. It's a whole, the whole Eastern take on the zombies, I think, is
And I'm not too familiar with the whole Eastern mythos behind their version of a zombie, but it is fairly unique in the fact that it's not your typical viral zombie, like they're saying. It's not your atypical voodoo zombie. I think there's probably a large case of there's a mixture of the two that's coming into place here. I honestly don't know the full... The only thing I know about Eastern zombies is that they hop because their legs are tied together basically when they're mummified and they... And the whole...
And that would be a little bit too close to the Purple Smurfs.
Yeah.
Get out!
Well, there is the one... remember the Japanese or old Chinese zombie flick I watched way back when we started the website, and I can't think of the name of it now, but all their zombies hopped everywhere. The vampires hopped, too.
Anyone listening to this who actually remembers the Purple Smurfs, put on your nerd badge now.
Right. Please, you know... Because I can't remember. I can't believe I was, you know, very young. I was thinking about, you know, viral infections that travel between small blues midget people.
God hoping they do not make a zombie film where the virus is transmitted by biting each other in the ass.
Yeah, exactly. Because if, well, or rather, if they do,
I hope it'll be a Misty Monday movie.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
If they do make
that
movie,
Living Head, something like that. Yeah.
Yes, and I will be there for it. Opening night.
It'll be made. Actually, no. That'll be made. That'll be made by our the great producers who have brought us many classics in the past, and this one will be entitled Zombie Movie.
Oh Christ! Not to not to generalize here, but horror porn. Could there possibly be a more manly form of cinema?
Exactly. You know, not only are you
unless you can somehow cram racing in there.
Actually, you know, if you could, you know, because you automatically, if you've got zombie porn, oh my God,
race.
I just said
hold
that.
Hold on, hold on. Night of the Living Sexual Death Race!
So, now, as far as Dead and Breakfast, there's actually quite a few fairly well-known names mixed in here. We have our female lead for the movie is Ever Carradine.
Well, she's not...
She's one of them.
It's hard to say she's a female
there really
lead.
Were no leads,
there really
so to
weren't.
Speak.
They were. It was an
right,
ensemble.
But she, there's
but
a couple
one
of them.
Big names, and she's now in Eureka. She plays the sister of the sheriff in Eureka.
Can I finish what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, I'm talking over you again. I apologize.
Ever Carradine is the daughter of Robert Carradine. Those of you who may know him better as Skulnick from. Revenge of the Nerds, which is awesome in itself.
Oh, wow.
And
yes.
Her dad, her uncle is David Carradine, who also has a cameo in this movie, who is like the king of B-movies. And the Carradine clan is huge. She does a good job in this movie. We also have Gina Phillips that works alongside her. She's been in quite a bit. The there's a movie we reviewed not too long ago about the plague doctors, which I can't think of the name of now. I'm on a roll. The Sick House.
The Sick House,
which
yes.
Did not turn out anywhere near as good as Dead and Breakfast, but she was in that one. We have Jeremy Sisto, who is slowly making his name as a independent horror film guy from the very wonderful May and
yeah,
many others.
Oh, what was the other one that he was in recently where he thought his life was a reality TV show?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Movie Hero, that's it. He thought his life was a movie. It was actually a really interesting film.
And so Jeremy Sisto has been around quite a bit. For myself, I think he's becoming slowly the... he is definitely working on a career that's going to be up there along the lines of David Carradine and Jeffrey Combs and them like that, because he seems to have a likeness for working in the low budget in the B-more horror movies. Diedrich Bader shows up with a cameo. There's many of these faces you're going to recognize, especially since this came out in 2004. Many of them have gone on to do bigger things now from there.
That's an interesting point to make, and that is that these independent horror, because it can suck in so many subgenres. You know, it can suck in the zombie movie. You can suck in. You can have science fiction. You can have fantasy elements. You can have all these different elements in independent horror and fantasy productions like this. That can really and are really skillfully, artfully done. That have a lot of humor in them. That have a lot of fun in them. You know, that have a lot of good. You know, creativity really shining through in the writing and in the shooting and in everything. And you know, and even in the visual effects. Even though they don't have that much to work with.
Right.
But I mean, it is nice to see someone actually working with practical effects as opposed to the glossy CGI that is so present nowadays.
That is actually one thing, I guess, that could really set this apart.
The world has meat to it.
Yeah.
It feels wet.
Dead and Breakfast case, you know. Yeah. The world feels really wet.
To give you an example, there's a scene... now I can't even think of where it was. It was early on when David first finds Diedrich Bader murdered in the kitchen. And they pan away, and there's a huge puddle of blood in the middle of the kitchen floor. And it literally looks like a can of cherry pie filling that somebody dumped on the floor, and that's your puddle of blood. And it's that quality of effects, which goes a lot farther to make the movies a lot more personal these days than, like Greg was saying, with the glossy CGI effects and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean...
oftentimes straight from your PlayStation, especially in the lower budget ones. But especially like...
or if you're Uwe Boll, it is literally from your PlayStation.
And they're horrid on all counts.
It's Lightwave and your Amiga, you know.
But, I mean, whenever you have those last stands when, you know, dozens of zombies are advancing and someone is cutting them down with a chainsaw or whatever, you got to have that practicality to it to make it feel that visceral.
Because, you know, if all you did was take one of those guys and clone him into the next zombie, you know, I guess that's... I don't know. I mean, there is a almost tactile difference between seeing Will Smith with his shotgun, you know, run into a room full of zombies. Oh, hell no! You know, and seeing Ever Carradine in this movie, all of a sudden turning into the female MacGyver from nowhere and building shotguns out of pipe fittings and wrenches. You know, and nails. That was really inspired. I mean, but the thing is, what I'm talking about is the zombies that she was shooting. I mean, you could tell that everything was physical, and everything had an immediate effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything was immediate. I mean, it was like, I guess the way to frame this is when you film CGI. And I know a little bit about CGI and compositing and stuff. Not much, but just a little.
Oh, don't we all nowadays?
Just enough to hurt myself, you know, if I ever come near a computer. But the fact is, with CGI, you basically film your action separate from your CGI, of course. And the CGI is then, of course, composited into the film. Well, the difference is, you know, that a lot of work goes into the bigger budget films, into motion tracking, that is lining up the effect with the actual physicality of the actors and the other machine things on set. Well, the problem with that is it will never be perfect. And even the slightest difference, the eye is not fooled. Or rather, the eye might be fooled, but the heart isn't in the film goer. You know, and in a lot of these lower budget films where the effects are purely practical, all physical, you know, no CGI, you know, a lot of technical excellence is demanded of the filmmaker to be able to do it right, number one. And number two, to be able to still invest it with some energy so that nothing looks too planned. And in a zombie film, you don't want planned. You want chaos.
Well, it's an aesthetic difference. It's a completely different movie I'm going to compare it to. But you can have Ever Carradine's Last Stand with the chainsaw and the encroaching horde and compare it to Keanu Reeves fighting 9,000 Hugo Weavings. It felt personal, though. I was actually rooting for it because you could almost feel the weight of each body as it piled onto it. Because it had that meatiness. It had that,
you could
that
feel
substance. Yeah. Whereas with Keanu Reeves, I felt like I was watching a really awesome cutscene from a video game.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean,
it's cool, but it's hard to emotionally invest in that.
And the larger part of that goes, too, though, with you can actually tell that, you know, that the actress is actually sitting there with all this crap being piled on top of her.
Keeping everything in camera. As a photographer, I can say when you have everything in camera, it does make for a much more, gotta hate to use this word nowadays, but a much more real or genuine performance.
Yeah, I mean, during that scene when she's fighting off, if you're thinking of the same scene I am on the stairwell.
Yes.
That you could really feel a true sense of claustrophobia, you know, as she, it basically was the zombies just, you know, dogpiled her, essentially.
Right.
You know, and kind of, I mean, you could really feel that true sense of claustrophobia when those hands come into frame from above and reach down and yank away her chainsaw. You know, you really feel a second of, oh, crap. Oh,
and regardless of its intent, every horror movie should make you say at least a few times, I hope that never happens to me.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
And that's exactly what I was thinking at that point in time. I was thinking, that would really suck.
Now, Colleen pointed out to me while we're sitting here, also mate with the big role in this movie as the sheriff is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, you've been seeing a buttload of lately. He's been Denny Duquette on Grey's Anatomy over, I think it was the second season. He's been in a lot of different stuff. He was the father in Supernatural. He's getting ready to become I can guarantee you he's going to become a really huge name here in the near future, because he's also going to be playing the comedian in the upcoming Watchmen feature, which is going to be huge. So,
assuming Red Tape doesn't kill it.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll get it out there.
Assuming Fox doesn't. He's got a new movie coming out now. It's The Accidental Husband with Uma Thurman.
Right, but we're not really interested in that.
I know.
Everyone's entitled to one misstep on the way to stardom.
Exactly.
We'll just count Watchmen as the cool point, and, that one is.
He's got a family he has to feed, I'm sure.
This is called. This show is called Midnight Monster, not Midnight Mushy Shit.
Oh. Right. Damn straight. There you go. There you go. Thank you, Casey.
Why you're sleeping on the couch?
Now, so Dead and Breakfast is, to me, it feels in a lot of ways, it's a good throwback to 80s horror comedy. Mm-hmm. It goes back to a lot of the roots. You've got the homemade special effects. You've got the blood and the latex blood and guts. It's a lot of fun. The humor is excellent throughout, and this played in very well. And just overall, it feels very much like an 80s horror comedy, which is when these movies ran king of the hill.
I actually read an interesting article the other day. It was on Ain't It Cool News, and it was about
Laura Schilling.
But
I just totally derailed you, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
A lot. Thanks a lot, shithead. But at any rate, what happened in this article was the guy was writing, it talked about the fact that the 80s gave birth to genre cinema. They gave birth to genre films. Because if you think about it, look back at the 80s, every other film was science fiction, fantasy, or horror. Every other film, you know. And then all of a sudden, around 1995 or so, the studio said, oh my God, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but we've been making money for the past 14 years. Holy crap! We need to do this on purpose! And as soon as they started doing it on purpose, it sucked. You know, the soul started slowly draining away. And movies like Dead and Breakfast are kind of a callback to an era when things were kindler and gentler to the moviegoer.
Kindler and gentler.
I went full retard.
You went full retard. You went full retard, man. You don't want to go full retard. Anyone who's listening, we apologize for our tasteless humor. If that word offended,
we are crude bastards. But basically,
we apologize if we're being retarded.
Sorry, that was a really retarded thing to say.
Full on retard.
The thing is, these movies. I mean, Dead and Breakfast is a callback to an earlier time, a kinder time. I mean, a time when movies were, when you could go to the multiplex and see a billion things that you might want to see, you know, instead of maybe just one or two, you know, and they were there for longer. Dead and Breakfast, I suspect, had it been released back in the time around, like I said, the same time frame Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 were released. Had it been released around those same time frames, I think it probably might have even found its way into a multiplex.
It probably would have had a similar cult following, too.
I find it funny
that Andy's could say this is a callback to kinder times, though, just from the sheer output of fake blood that they use in this movie.
Gratuitous
shots of it.
Gentler times when fake blood was in, you know, fake blood was cheaper, you know.
And not so much kindler, gentler, but just more ridiculous. That's what I liked about the film. Like, the 80s, you could do ridiculous, and it would still work. It wouldn't fly off the rails. Dead and Breakfast was absurd. It was completely and totally absurd, but it still told a story, and it still functioned.
Greg and I have often talked about the, quote-unquote, what-the-fuck factor.
Yeah.
And that is something that Dead and Breakfast really had a lot of. And, you know,
there was obviously no time when anyone said, we can't put that in a movie, it's too silly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one did that.
Line dancing zombies, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Can you see that in a major studio production?
But I could see somebody, you know, watching Michael Jackson's Thriller and saying, oh my God, guys, can you imagine? What if this was country?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was in a movie. Holy shit.
And that's where the best ideas come from. What if we did this?
Yeah. Just for no reason.
You could pretty much guarantee that there was a whole lot of pot involved in the screenwriting phase of this movie.
A lot of coffee, a lot of pot, Lord knows what else.
Yes.
And the ridiculous of it actually disguises the fact that it's working basically along the lines of the same horror cliches that have been around for a while. As I mentioned before, the group of idiots having the worst road trip ever.
Yep.
And I think anybody who's ever gone out with their friends for a long trip can relate to that.
Greg and I
And that's another big part of horror, relatability. You're like, oh my God, I can see that happening.
Yes.
I can see that
That's happening. A whole other show, the Adventures of Greg and Andy getting up here.
The Adventures of Greg and Andy going anywhere.
You'd have to edit that down. Adventure. You'd have to edit that down because that would be like a 9-hour program. That would be like Lord of the Goddamn Rings.
Yeah, it would be that. It would be that treacherous a journey.
So, folks, that's Dead and Breakfast. I myself am going to give this the official 9 out of 10 Cinema Fromage rating.
Oh, this is one of my all-time favorite horror films, so it's so much fun. So I give it 10 out of 10, because it's when I'll watch it.
I think that's a first for the show, a 10 out of 10 out of Colleen. How about you guys?
Oh, I would solidly give, I would give it a 9 out of 10, honestly, I would.
There we go.
Just for sheer silliness and balls and cool factor, I would.
And Greg?
9 out of 10, no doubt, I had a blast.
There we go, folks, that's a resounding 4 must-sees out of 4. So, folks, you owe it to yourself. Throw it in the Netflix queue. If you have not seen it yet, you deserve to see it just for the line dancing zombies alone. So, from signing out from Noblesville, Indiana, it's Casey and Colleen and our special guests, Greg and Andy.
That's right! Can you guess what I just watched?
Hey, folks, Eric here from the Bloody Good Horror Podcast, and I'm here today to talk to you about decisions. Sometimes you have a noisy neighbor that you just don't know how to deal with. Maybe you've got someone tied up in your basement and you're not really sure how long you should leave them there. Or maybe you're having a tough time deciding what to do with the stray cat that's keeping you up all night. And that's why I'm here today, folks, because the decision to listen to Bloody Good Horror is an easy one. So do yourself a favor and check out Bloody Good Horror today. That's bloodygoodhorror.com, the one choice in life that's easy. Plus, we'll help you figure out where to bury that dead body you're driving around with. And don't worry, if you didn't see anything, neither did we.
Meet Igor. In a world of mad scientists, he's just a humble servant.
Igor! Sorry, master. I was in the bathroom. Had a bat stuck in the belfry, if you know what I mean.
Ow! Now, to fulfill his destiny.
If I had my shot, I would have the greatest invention of all time.
He'll have to follow his hunch.
An Igor inventing.
Trust his brain.
What are you, an idiot?
Yes, I am. That's Latin for brain, correct?
And call on the help.
Pull the switch!
Of one grumpy bunny.
Do not yell at me.
Please pull the switch.
Wait, why does he get to pull the switch?
Stop, you can both pull the switch.
This year. Adventure. Will be reinvented.
Works for me.
Igor.
Created life. Maybe I did too much.
Recently, this Friday, a little cartoon movie came out called Igor, or Igor, depending on how you want to pronounce it. It was directed by Anthony Lindes and was written by Chris McKenna, starring voice talents of John Cusack, John Cleese, Steve Buscemi, Sean Hayes, Eddie Izzard, Jennifer Coolidge, Jay Leno, Molly Shannon, and many, 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 many more. It's a story of a Igor who, that's their race, the hunchback race, who wants to be
a mad scientist, an evil scientist.
Because he thinks that evil is the way you're supposed to be. That's how his king has decreed that everyone should be evil, and evil is the best way to do it. Right?
Yep.
So Delaney and I went and saw this movie together. And what did you think of the movie, Delaney?
I liked it, and it was funny.
It was funny. What was your favorite part?
At the end, end, which I don't want to tell, and in the middle when they did the brainwashing.
The brainwashing.
It was funny because when Brain, or you could call him Brain or Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And
because he had Brian, he was trying to spell Brain on his jar and misspelled it and wrote Brian instead with a permanent marker. So.
But my favorite part since I saw the commercial was when he said stupid permanent marker and tried to rub it up.
That was pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
And you said your favorite part, you said you didn't want to tell because it's in the end, it's when, but it's okay to tell this part because it doesn't really give away anything, is when all the little blind kids start singing, I can see clearly now the rain is gone. Which was very, very, very funny. It was. I agree.
Yeah.
Now, pretty much what this is about is the Igor who is trying to become an evil scientist. So every year they have a big science fair sort of thing, and all of the evil scientists come and they make all of these inventions, and then whichever invention wins in the end, they will then tell the world they're going to unleash it unless the world pays them a bunch of money. And so everybody is trying to make something big. There's one scientist who is very evil, and he has a girlfriend, and he can't invent anything. So he's trying to steal someone else's invention. And when they find out that Igor has created an invention which actually creates life and creates this monster, he tries to steal it.
Well, his girlfriend ended up not really being his girlfriend anymore.
Right, because she had a special magic pill that would let her change into different people, so she was pretending to be a bunch of people at once, and it got a little confusing, but it was very, very funny, because she would change, Molly Shannon played one portion of her, and, who was it? Jennifer Coolidge played another portion of her, and it was pretty funny to see them. We're on the second half. Okay. Well, pretty much what this movie is telling us is what?
About an evil world that actually turns into a good world, which is weird.
It's weird that way?
Because he goes up really high,
mm-hmm.
And then he finds out that it would be a good world if something broke the top of it.
Right, because the villain in this movie was telling everyone that they were supposed to be evil, but in reality, you didn't have to be evil. And even though he had put the evil bone into the monster, he even says at one point, everybody has an evil bone in their body, and it's up to them if they choose to use it or not, right? Oh, sorry. Did you want to say that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't. Well, go ahead and say what you want to say.
They wanted them to use it if they wanted to or not, and I want to tell you my favorite character.
Okay.
Which is Brain or Brian, whatever you want to call him.
Brain or Brian, who was played by Sean Hayes, and for those of you who like to watch the comedy Will and Grace, he was just Jack.
It was because my first favorite part, stupid permanent marker.
Yeah, that was very, very funny. And the rabbit, Scamper, who was voiced by Steve Buscemi. Okay, well, what did Scamper do? What was Scamper's specific problem?
Uh, Well, Scamper was trying to kill himself, which he couldn't.
Yes, because he was made immortal. So every time, he didn't want to live, and so he kept doing things to kill himself, and then he'd just come back to life, and he'd get even more angry and more depressed. And where
the favorite part of when Scamper did it, is when his face blew up. And then it came back.
Yeah, because he put a bomb in his mouth and his face blew up and it came back. And
no, when we saw his brain.
Oh, when you saw... Oh, okay, yeah. That was... that. I mean, it was a... Where this movie, it may sound very violent and very dark, is actually... has such a wonderful message that if we decide we don't want to be mean... Everybody can be mean if they choose to. But if we decide we don't want to be mean and we don't want to use that mean bone that we have, we can be good to each other, right?
Yep.
And is that an important message for us to hear?
Yes.
Why is that important?
Because if you be nice to other people, then... they'll be nice to you. If they first weren't nice, you gotta be nice to them.
That's right. And it just because somebody says it's best to be mean doesn't mean we have to be mean.
Right!
And that is it. What do you think people should go see this movie?
Awesome!
You do. And I do too, because it was a really fun movie to see. There were a lot of fun musical numbers, but it wasn't like a Disney musical show.
Mm-hmm. I have to talk like Stitch!
Yes, you can. And it was, you know, it was a great experience for Delaney and me to go out to this movie together and actually get a decent message across and still be really entertained. It wasn't dumbing it down for us. It wasn't really... And it was just dark enough that it kept, you know, the parents amused as well. So we had a good time, didn't we? Even though you ate all my popcorn. Okay, folks, that's it. For Igor, I think we'll give it... What? How many stars? Out of 10. Huh? Out of 10.
Done.
10 stars out of 10. Okay, Delaney. And I'll give it 8 out of 10. It was a lot of fun, a lot of fun music, and a lot of fun storyline, and great characters.
See you later, alligator.
I'm heading our way. It looks like we're approaching the car. As the figure gets nearer, the image becomes clearer. It looks like someone's old grandma. The light from the street lamp reflects off her handbag and shines on her Zimmer frame. Gets closer, the picture gets grosser. The woman looks insane. Take another map of the beer bath and wind the window down. When this psycho granny sticks her head in the car and opens up her mouth. Green teeth and bad breath make the lips like an old dog's bone. Instead of offering pleasantries, she pulls out a huge gun. We all jump out of the car and she starts shooting at us.